We'll bring the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Policy Committee to order. Representative Cornish, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, I have.
Representative Cornish moves the minutes. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Members, we've got two bills today, so we should be getting done relatively soon. Depends on how controversial these are and how many questions we have. But first on the agenda is Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee. The chair will move House File 1182. We'll be moving that to the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee. Is that the motion you prefer?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Please proceed.
Thank you, members. I'll be very brief to respect your time. What this bill does is it allows for us to encourage people to do organ donation through their fishing and hunting licenses. And that's it in a nutshell. This is something that we've been working on for a couple of years, starting first with your driver's license. And the idea behind it is to encourage more people to do organ donation. And if you haven't been touched by this, I encourage you to spend some time looking at LifeSource and donate websites and look at the impact that organ donation has had on the lives of Minnesotans. No one wants to lose a loved one. But when you do lose that loved one, the ability to save up to 76 or more lives is remarkable. And that's what we've seen through the state of Minnesota and the benefits that we've been able to achieve for people to live longer and healthier lives just by the generous donations of people. And I just want to highlight a couple of people that we've seen give organ donation and save the lives of others. Katrina, she died in a car accident at the age of 16. She was from the Hibbing Chisholm area, and her donations of her organs after she died, unfortunately, have helped many, many people across the state, as well as Ricardo, who died. He was a father of three, when his mother saw that he was an organ donor, she said, "My son is a registered donor. Can he help someone?" And he certainly did by his generous donations to people after his untimely death. So this is just great, a way to encourage more and more people to do this. I do have a testifier, Mr. Chair, that can speak to more of the mechanics of the bill.
Very good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Susan Mao Larson, and I serve as Director of Public Affairs for LifeSource. And thank you for allowing me here today, and I'm here to express my support for House File 1182. LifeSource is the nonprofit organization that is designated by the federal government to manage all organ donation after death for Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Western Wisconsin. We also manage tissue donation after death. So what that means is that when someone has died, people like Katrina and Ricardo, we are actually called, and we work with the hospital, and we work with the families, and we support the families, and we do all we can to honor their wishes and to make sure those in need of a transplant get the gifts that they need. As Sarah said, it's very important that we increase the number of people who are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors, and that's an important part of what LifeSource does as the federally designated organization responsible for organ donation. That's a critical part of our responsibility. And coupling donor registration with hunting and fishing license offers us a unique opportunity to reach more people and people that are often hard to reach who are not already registered donors. The way this works now is, as many of you know, when you get your driver's license or state ID card, you have the opportunity to check the box saying you want to be a donor. We partner with the Department of Public Safety to make sure that they have information about donation to share with their customers when they come into the office. When somebody dies, we actually are the ones that check whether or not they had donor on their license. So the situation would be somebody has a severe injury or illness, they're brought to the hospital. Once the doctors determine that their life cannot be saved, we are called. And that's a federal mandate that we must be called. And so we determine if they have a potential to help others through donation, and we check whether or not donor was indicated on their driver's license. If it was, we share that information with the family, and then we do all we can to honor and fulfill those wishes. If they didn't, we ask the family if they would choose donation. So as you can imagine, when someone has donor on their license, they do donate. When someone doesn't have donor on their license, about half the time the family says no. And that's an unfortunate loss, I think, both for the family, who can get a lot of healing from their loved one's gift, and for those who are waiting for transplant. So right now we have 64% of adults in Minnesota are registered, and we would like to do all we can to increase that. And this bill offers a very unique opportunity. The bill is written so that it would be implemented a year out, because there's a lot of to work out. We are very committed to collaborating with the DNR to make sure that we can implement this. This is very new. We would be the first state in the nation to adopt this practice, and I think that that is very in keeping with our tradition as an innovative leader in donation. But I think it's important that we spend the right time to work out all the details, and that's why we put the implementation date out. You'll notice also that LifeSource is committed to doing all we can to support any costs of the implementation of this bill. So we think this is very important. We thank Representative Anderson for her support in this process, and I thank you for listening, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions, members? Representative Consulman.
I think it's a great idea, Mr. Chair. And I actually have donor on my driver's license, so I'm not sure anybody wants anything I've got anymore. My only question is there an age limit on this, or would they have to have, like, their parents' permission if they, mm-hmm. How does that work?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm sorry, I can't see your
Constantine.
Name.
Constantine.
Thank you. So the way it works now with the driver's license is that anyone with a driver's license or ID card can put donor on that. If somebody passes away before the age of 18, then their parents have to affirm that decision. And so they can, and like Katrina that Representative Anderson mentioned, she was under the age of 18, I believe. So she had indicated that she wanted to be a donor, and her parents supported her wishes, but they were asked for that.
Representative Constantine.
Is there a way you could do that ahead of time? I mean, if you couldn't get a hold of the parents right away, could there be something that says, you know, the parents have already consented, or I'm just thinking you might lose some
yeah.
donations because you couldn't get in
yeah.
contact right away?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is a very good question. We've not had that happen, that we weren't able to get a hold of the family. We actually generally have the time, but I think that's an important thing for us to think about, because we want to make sure every gift is fulfilled.
Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got two questions. The first one's relatively simple. And I'm just not familiar with what the applications look like. Do you know if a person holds a lifetime hunting or fishing license, and they do have to actually go out and get the yearly license as a result of that, but would they have an opportunity to do that? I don't know if anybody, the DNR knows if the application looks the right way for that to happen. We could put that off until.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Russo, my understanding is you get your hunting and fishing license every year, and in fact, that's one of the great opportunities of this legislation, because we only get our driver's license every 4 years. Whether it's a lifetime opportunity, I guess we'll look to.
There are lifetime licenses as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, do you have a, you know, some sort of target in mind? Since we all, you know, most of the people getting a hunting or fishing license have driver's licenses, and that's not universal. Some of them that don't might have IDs. What additional results do you expect out of extending this to the hunting and fishing licenses?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Urusso, that's a good question. When we look at our data, and we're trying to look at if we have 60%, how do we get the other 30, 35% of people, give them the opportunity to register? One of the groups of individuals that's less likely to be registered are men. Women are 8 to 10% more likely to have donor on their license than men, and we also know statistically men represent a large portion of those who are hunting and fishing, so we think this is another opportunity to reach that audience, perhaps in an environment and with a message that is comfortable for them, that would help encourage them or inspire them to say yes to donation.
Okay. Representative Urusel?
That's all. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Okay. Anybody from the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill, please come forward. Mr. Mr. Meyer, please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. And we have been working with LifeSource and the author on this bill. It is a really important issue and one that we agree with. I am also a donor on my driver's license. How do we get more? I think, you know, the fiscal impacts of this will be discussed in committees down the road, but it's hard to put a price tag on somebody's life, right? If we can save one more person, get somebody the chance to survive and to go hunting and fishing again, it'll be worth however much it's going to cost to implement this. But we do need to try to just figure out how it works. So, for example, there is no application for a person to get a hunting and fishing license. I think Representative Russo was correct. You go in, and I'm sure most of you have bought a hunting and fishing license. You swipe your card. Sometimes it's a 16-year-old kid at a Holiday gas station, but that wouldn't be able to be done here. This is just at the DNR, at the deputy register stations, and online. So the application piece doesn't really work. We need to work on that. I think it's important that the validation or this form that the person fills out gets taken care of and over to DPS or on the registry somehow. The printing of donor on the license, the question I have, and it's actually addressed on 2.27 in I there, you sign up for this donor through the license, it's permanent. It's there for the rest of your life unless you ask for written. The donor designation may only be removed upon written notice to the commissioner. So if you buy a 7-day fishing license or you buy a hunting license one time to go, you know, deer hunting or something like that, and you sign up as a donor, now you're a donor for life, which is fine. It's a great thing, but the printing of the donor on the license is going to drive us to costs to program the license system and things like that. So that's a couple of the questions that we have. All of the costs for the program would actually be funded through the anatomical gift account. It's really, how do we get this set up to work, right? And with technology being what it is, I think we can probably figure out some efficient ways for the DNR to promote to our clientele the importance of organ donation and the process that's out there to do that. So we look forward to working with the author and LifeSource and the legislature to try to figure out the best path forward for this important issue.
Okay. Questions, Commissioner? Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm an author of that, and I also resemble this bill. So with my spare kidney I've got in here from 4 years ago, so I'm really supportive of it. I do know that listening to the testimony that it's going to be important to figure out how it actually works, and that's usually where the devils are in the detail. The devil is in the details, and so well, good luck on that. Look forward to seeing it. This isn't the first time the bill's been offered.
Anyone else? Anybody else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Okay, with that, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1182 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. Bill's moved on. Representative Anderson, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your bill. Representative Van Zyl. Representative Anzel moves House File 416, and we're going to refer your bill to taxes. Is that your motion? Okay. Representative Anzel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's nice to be here. I've heard very nice things about this committee and your leadership here.
So, Representative Anzel,
presenting the bill.
Would you like to move your amendments first?
Yes, please.
To get the bill in the shape you'd like?
Yes, please.
Representative Anzel moves the A150112 amendment. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. That amendment is passed. And let's pass the next one as well. Then the bill will be in the shape that you like, and you can explain everything all at once. Representative Anzel moves House or Amendment A150086. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. Your amendments are adopted, and the bill's in the shape that you like.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Joining me at the table here is the Executive Director of the Iron Mining Association, Mr. Craig Pagel, And also in the room is Mr. Jess Richards from DNR Minerals, who I'll ask to come down if need be. Mr. Chairman and members, this legislation actually reinstates a provision that was in law, and that provision expired in 2008. And the provision provided for an incentive for iron ore mining companies, iron ore and taconite mining companies, to move their pellet production facilities into the manufacturing of what is called a DRI pellet, which is a value-added pellet with more iron content in it than the common taconite pellet. It was thought at the time of the incentive that this was a good idea to incentivize the companies to make the investment, to create the jobs, and to create a product which was more conducive to the growing electric arc furnace steel making capacity, which was growing and is growing in the United States, primarily in the southern states. The taconite pellet is conducive to the old style steel making furnace. This pellet with a higher iron ore content is more conducive to the growing electric arc furnace process. So the bill reinstates that incentive by giving mining companies a pretty significant break on their taconite production tax. At the present time, the taconite production tax is $2.56 a long ton, which is 2,240 pounds. And this bill incentivizes any company that moves into a direct reduced pellet by giving them zero taconite production tax on that portion of their operations that's DRI, zero production tax in year one, zero production tax in year two, 25% of $2.56 in year three, 50% of $2.56 a long ton in year four, 75% of the production tax of $2.56 in year five, and it wouldn't be until year six for any company that would invest in making a DRI grade pellet. It would be in year six before they would pay the full taconite production tax. As you know, calendar year 15 and calendar year 16 and quite possibly 17 are going to be very difficult years for the iron ore, pellet, and steel industry domestically. Prices are lower. There is a glut of product in the market, and we're very concerned about the health of our taconite industry. Several of our companies have expressed an interest in DRI, in making the investment that would create the jobs and create the value-added product for electric arc furnaces. And we think that by reinstating the range delegation, that is, and our partners in the Iron Mining Association are in agreement that this incentive would be something that would be good. Now, the amendments that the chair so nicely added onto the bill to get it shaped up The First Amendment, the A-15-0112 Amendment, clarifies some previous language regarding how the occupation tax, which is paid by the mining companies, is used to assist the DNR and the PCA in their complex permitting and regulatory environment. And to that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Pagel, who's an expert in all matters regulation and permitting.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, my gosh. Don't let him in.
My name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. Thank you for the chance to address you today. The reason for placing 1.5 million in here or 2.5 cents a ton based on the previous year is to help basically so that as our production numbers go up and down, there's more of a solid number for the PCA, DNR, so that they can continue to staff. Often when our production levels go down is when there'll be more permitting, or even in the case of the DRI, if they're not having to fulfill all their furnaces for contracted amounts of pellets, they're actually going to be able to make some of these changes. We will need to continue to have PCA DNR permitting through those lower times, and this would help stabilize it. It makes no changes in environmental laws, makes no changes in who else is paying the tax. The occupation tax, 10% goes to the K-12 trust fund, 40% goes to the, 10% goes to the University Trust Fund, 40% goes to K-12. The other remaining goes to the general fund. That's where this dollar amount would come from.
Okay, and you want to explain the other amendment as well before we take questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the second amendment better defines the difference between the current taconite pellet, which is being produced on the range, and a DRI pellet. The current taconite pellet is somewhere between 60 and 65% iron. A DRI pellet is at least 67% iron and includes silica plus alumina content no greater than 3%. That is what a DRI grade pellet, which is compatible with an electric arc furnace, means, and that amendment simply clarifies what the pellet's metallurgy is. Lastly, before I stand for questions, Mr. Chair, if somebody would have told me 20 years ago that I'd be here reducing taxes for the mining industry, I would say that's probably not very likely. But we've learned over the years that working together, incentivizing, creating an environment for our natural resource-based economy to thrive and grow and create some jobs is a good thing. And our delegation is committed to that approach, and that's what this bill is all about.
Very good. Questions, member? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take a second to recognize former used to be somebody and now is again, and I think it's his first time at the Capitol since retiring, Representative Brooke Vina.
I was going to say if anybody in the audience wanted to come and speak for or against the bill, we'd offer.
You better not do that.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman, to the committee, Representative Brooke Vina. Commissioner Brooke Vina.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Metzen.
Representative Dill? Well, thank you. I'm not going to ask for a roll call on the vote. I don't think it's necessary, but I do want it noted in the moment and the minutes, that I'll be voting to help the taconite taxes be lowered for some companies who want to invest on the range. Especially I want to do that in view of the fact that my friend Craig Pagel, who represents the iron mines, we have this running thing that every issue is always settled at our apartment by raising the tax 5%. 5 cents. So I'll be supporting this, and this is a good thing.
So noted. Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question
Could you lay out a little more how the DRI product fits into North American steel production? Some folks may not grasp how that works in, you know, throughout the country and really North America.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lux, thanks for the question. I'm going to defer to Mr. Pagel.
Mr. Pagel.
Chair, members, I hope I can answer it. One of the things that's been changing quite a bit is the arc furnace, which was developed quite a while ago, they've been able to refine their product so it's a steel that can be used where it hadn't in the past. The iron ore pellet was developed as the original red ore kind of came to a close because of all the work that was done during World War I and World War II by the miners so that we were able to produce steel when we needed it for the rest of the world. Once we got into the taconite side, they developed the taconite pellet that's used in the blast furnaces. Most of the blast furnaces will give you a your rolled steel, things that we use in our appliances every day. About 25% of their use is in cars. But we're more and more we're getting the use of arc furnaces, and we're just trying to meet that need. One of the problems is steel and iron in the United States is recycled at about 92%. There's a market need for more of this type of material that we can meet here in Minnesota by developing a DRI or the nugget that was developed by Mesabi Nugget.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzell, where does this tax that normally would have been collected, could you explain where that would normally go? Who's the benefit of this tax? What's it used for?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, clarification, please. Are you asking about the taconite production tax, or are you asking about the occupation tax?
Thank you for that question. Mr. Chair, Representative Anzell, the $2.56 per long ton.
Representative Anzell.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, the taconite production tax of $2.56 a ton is distributed throughout the taconite relief area. Eligible counties, municipalities, school districts, and townships in Aiken, Crow Wing, Itasca, St. Louis, Cook, and Lake are eligible. The taconite distribution is by formula. A certain percentage of it is the taconite homestead credit. A certain portion of it goes into the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Development Fund to be used by the agency, the IRRRB agency commissioner and board for the economic diversification of the Iron Range in those six counties. Some of the taconite production tax money goes to school districts, some to municipalities, some to townships, some to counties. I would underscore that the taconite production tax is in lieu of property taxes. Mining companies do not pay any property taxes. They pay a tax on their production, and so therefore the argument statutorily that is clear in our statute books is that this is local money in lieu of property taxes to be shared with the citizens throughout the taconite relief area.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzell, that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure that you had stated that as I understood it. So with that being the case, then, how much production capacity, what is the potential of any number of entities, and, you know, is there any kind of fiscal note as to how much that might cost to allow an exemption for a phased-in five-year production on this?
Representative Anzell.
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. There is no fiscal note that I am aware of that deducts from local units of government what would happen if there were one or more DRI facilities constructed and producing a DRI pellet. I would assume that when and if a company does pull the trigger on a DRI facility, we will be able to provide the citizens and the committee with those numbers. It would be a reduction. It would be a reduction, a small reduction, in the amount of the overall taconite production tax collected on production. And production is approximately 40 million tons of long tons per year. And I want to underscore that this tax incentive would only apply to that portion of the taconite plant that is DRI. It would not pertain to the tonnage that is a regular taconite pellet or flux pellet.
Representative Bertos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anzell. That tied into my third question, which I wanted to make sure that it did just that. This is to the company specific and not to location specific. So if they had two or three multiple sites where they would be producing this from, would that does it just really apply to the end production and not have a rolling schedule in terms of, well, we started this mine in 2015 and this one in 2017? You know, are those the kickers that start a five-year window on forgiveness, or is it just on that company?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pertos, I would prefer if you wouldn't use the word forgiveness, first of all. And secondly, it would, in theory,
abatement,
theory, be a slight reduction by company in their taconite production tax liability. And I want to underscore it would be a very, very small amount.
And my
Bertos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my last comment is I'm just really flabbergasted and impressed that you now do purport to believe that if you want more of something, you tax it less. Thank you for that. That's really an epiphany coming from my dear colleague.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I heard a couple different things in there that I want to just touch on. First off, this bill will have no effect on the taconite production taxes collected from the current production of taconite or the future taconite that's produced. It's only effective as a reduction of the amount that would generally be paid on future production of not taconite, but direct reduced iron. Right. So I've heard a couple times when people say, well, this is a reduction in the taconite production tax. This is a reduction in that tax only for future. Think of it like TIF, except TIF for pellets. Now, there's another tax for rabbit pellets, but that's not in this bill. So I just wanted to clarify that because I heard between your exchange a couple of different iterations there. And you know, you're correct. Don't tax it and they shall come. Is that what you just said? But it has nothing to do with what any of the taconites that are producing taconite pellets or any future company, for example, SR Steel, or I should say SR Taconite, that when they come, they will pay the regular production tax without any incentive. Okay?
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my questions actually are related to what Representative Hertas was asking. So I have a concern that we in Minnesota here have policies or a tax structure that makes it hostile for businesses to operate in the state of Minnesota as a whole, not targeting any particular industry. And in recognition of that, certain areas get impacted over others, such as maybe border counties, or in this case, northeast Minnesota, the Iron Range area, etc. There's lots of examples. And the response for that is, after creating this problem of a hostile climate for business, to go in and then selectively provide tax breaks or other incentives on an industry basis or a geographic basis, et cetera, because then the rest of the state of Minnesota who don't qualify under such narrow definitions are still suffering the hardship. So I guess the first question I would have is, in the last 2 years under Democrat control, are you aware of any policies or tax increases enacted which would make it more unattractive to start or continue mining operations.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lucero, I would argue if we had the time and if Chairman Hackbarth wanted to go on for a couple of hours here, I would argue that Minnesota's iron and taconite companies really have a good deal in terms of the level of taxes paid, considering the fact that mining is an extractive activity. Once the ore is taken from the earth, once the people lose the value of their area, it doesn't grow back. It's a finite resource. And the level of taxation, all levels of taxation, including royalties paid to Rockefeller and Pillsbury and all of those people, is easily in the 3 to 4% range. And mining is the cyclical industry. When times are good, it's really good. When times are bad, such as what we're going to be approaching now, they can get really bad. And I think that this incentive is good for Minnesota, it's good for the people of the Mesabi, and it's certainly would be appreciated by every mayor and city council person and worker. The 4,000 workers in those mines would certainly appreciate your support here today.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I have no doubt, absolutely, would be appreciative. Local officials would be appreciative of tax breaks. The hardworking Minnesotans up there would definitely be appreciative. But again, my question is, when it comes to business operations, what matters is the total cost of business. And so again, I'll ask the question, were there any policies, not necessarily tax related, but have there been in the last 2 years policies enacted that increase the cost of doing business in the totality that have disincentivized companies to start or continue mining operations? And in your own words, you're asking for this tax break as an incentive to start mining operations or continue those that exist. So again, I'm just asking the question, is there anything that has increased the cost of business?
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for the clarification. Of course, all of us on this committee know that there is a cost to environmental compliance, environmental regulation, with regard to mining. And that would be definitely an increase in the cost of doing business. And I would want you to know that in the 125 years of iron ore mining, the people of the Mesabi have always tried to balance harm to the environment and the good jobs and the advantages that mining has brought to our area. Without mining, there is no Mesabi Iron Range.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll just
to this bill.
Yep, I'll just reiterate that I what I'm struggling with is, on one hand, I'm in favor of tax decreases wherever we can, but at the same time, there's a recognition that in the last couple of years, policies enacted under Democrat control increased cost of doing business, so we have to go in and incentivize via the tax code targeting. And I'm just looking for a way to rectify those two positions. And it's anyway, that's what I'm struggling with. So I am in favor, but I struggle. So
to that point, Representative Dill.
Well, this could turn partisan very quickly here. And I, frankly, I really don't appreciate it, because I could certainly go back and point to the Renewable Energy Standard, which is just going to bury the taconite industry that was passed by another administration that you are in the party of. But I won't go back and mention that so that he can maybe become president. Lastly, to your question is we do refund 25 cents of their taconite tax of the $2.50 each year to the companies to make improvements, tax that they pay to us that we turn around then and they bring us projects and that we refund it back to them so that they can match it dollar for dollar, thanks to Representative Moline, and increase their efficiency in those plants. There is always a delicate balance on the Iron Range about the taconite production tax. But I don't think you see any company before us here in the room, either the, Mr. Pagel represents all of them essentially, but you do not see any companies in these rooms in here asking for reductions in taconite production taxes in this room or in any other room that you've testified in before or heard a testimony in before. So I think that we have created a pretty good balance of that. Sometimes we feel like on the Iron Range that we're on the back side of that curve, and sometimes we maybe the companies feel they're on the other side of that curve. But, I mean, with all due respect, probably should sweep your own steps first. Thank you.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ditto, Representative Dill, and Representative Lucero. I was just wondering if you could point out any of these things you're talking about, or if you were just good at reading questions other people wrote.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of them would be the warehouse tax. Right, and I have no questions here. So nobody else wrote them. I'm asking them off my own head. So the warehouse tax has caused particular industry to have a hardship and has caused them to cross the border to states that are more friendly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was actually, I think, repealed before much of it took effect. However, I am unaware of any jobs in the mining industry that actually moved to Wisconsin or the Dakotas in specifics to that.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Angelo, I want to thank you for doing this. I spent 2 years going to college up in Hibbing, and had the pleasure of meeting Representative Moline's father up there. And nice, I can actually call him a friend. What I see from this is a bill to create jobs. It's an opportunity for these mining companies to come in and create another product, creating more jobs, more good-paying jobs for the people up in the Iron Range. Back when I went to college up there, it was towards the decline of the mining industry. And I was up there about 7 years ago, seeing the difference in the town of Hibbing because the mines production has dropped quite a bit. I've seen businesses I used to go to all the time, going to the mall, and seeing 50-60% of the mall shut down. Bills like this to get jobs going up there is going to help the economy of that, and that's what we needed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and we're kind of past the point now. I don't know if anything more needs to be said about Representative Lucero's comments, but I think, you know, it is unfortunate that this bill all of a sudden had to turn partisan. The warehouse tax was repealed before it was ever even enacted. It never impacted the mining industry. So if you have other specifics that you would like to talk about that happened over the last 2 years when the DFL controlled state government, we would be happy to do that. There was a slight increase on the tax companies, and I was the author of that bill, and I am a Democrat, and I represent the Iron Range. And we did increase their taxes slightly, and we worked with the companies in order to do that, and we dedicated it to education. So we can talk about what we did over the last 2 years, but if you could just get your facts cleared before we get into partisan debates over a bill that should be bipartisan, we would certainly appreciate it.
Representative Moline and Representative Lucero and members of this committee, this is not about any of that right now, and I just soon end this conversation on this issue and move on with this bill.
So, Mr. Chair.
But to that point, Representative Lucero, go ahead.
Thank you, and I'll just end with this. I am in favor of this because I do believe that the tax decreases will help incentivize and create jobs and help the hardship. We want to help businesses. We want to help jobs. So that's why I want to make that point clear. I'm in favor of this. But my overarching point that I was trying to get at was that there are other businesses around the state of Minnesota that have a hardship that aren't in one of these other, aren't targeted tax breaks. I just want to make sure that they're also, we're cognizant of that. But yes, I am in favor of this bill because as Representative Anderson was Johnson was saying that. Yeah, that's exactly what it'll do.
Representative Russo, to the bill, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to remember what the character of this particular tax is. This is not a tax break that is being given on business income or other types of taxes that all businesses have. This is a reduction in a tax that is levied only against this particular industry. So it's not possible to give this tax break on production costs to any other industry because we don't have a tax on production in any of the other industries. We don't tax my international paper company on the boxes of paper that they produce. And we don't tax a corn farmer on the bushels of corn that they produce. We don't tax anybody that produces things other than this is a very specific thing. And so this is unlike TIF, actually, in that respect, because TIF is a break on property taxes that everybody pays. So I think it's unfair to characterize this as an unfair break given to one particular industry versus others, because in fact the original tax was applied to this industry to recognize that would help out this area in which this production takes place. But we have not applied that sort of tax to other industries, even though some of them are similar. They're not exactly the same in extractive nature, but we don't tax farmers on the degree to which they do or do not exhaust the growing potential of their land. We don't tax, the peat mining companies on how much peat they've removed from the bogs and so on. So I don't think that's a fair characterization.
Representative Constantine.
I would like to call the question.
Representative Dill.
I just didn't know. I think this should now be, Mr. Chairman, the mining and outdoor recreation and surrogate tax.
Yeah.
Any other questions, members? Anyone else from the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Where'd Rick Avina go?
He left when he heard tax.
I wish he'd have stuck around. We'd have really had some fireworks going here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
To that point, I just texted him and told him he better come back about 5 minutes ago. I thought he might be interested. Sorry.
Representative Anzell renews his motion that House File 416 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed and sent to taxes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. A good bill, and I support it. Members, just one announcement. We're going to form a land subcommittee, and I'm appointing Representative Lewick, Representative Keel, Representative Anderson, and Zell, and Representative Dill to a land subcommittee. They will meet next Tuesday. The rest of us do not have to meet here next Tuesday, just the subcommittee. Dill, Lewick, Keel, Anderson, and Anzell. Representative Dill will be the author of the lands bill and the chair of that committee. And that will take place during our regular time, 2:45 next Tuesday. With that, meeting adjourned.